Blog Talk Radio.
Life seems to crush your dreams, so find your balance for all your needs. A little work, some family fun. Find your love, keep your life on the run. Told you how the story goes, so write your own script before you grow old. Live your life, laugh out loud. Own who you are, stand up proud. You gotta find what works for you. Find a balance that lets you be you.
Good evening and welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And it is Wednesday, November the 3rd for episode number 289. And this is Stephen Zimmer broadcasting live, as I said before, out of Lexington, Kentucky. And joining me tonight, I have two great co-hosts. One will be joining us in progress. That will be Rose Marie Machario. And she, of course, will be calling in from Tennessee, and also from Tennessee, from parts unknown. The one you all love with the big top hat and the Jack the Ripper tails, Daniel Dark. How are you doing, Daniel? It would probably help if I had Daniel's microphone on. How are you doing, Daniel? Sorry about that. Let me welcome you again.
That's probably the better thing, is to have me, you know, just, you know, mute me all the time and everything, so I don't say anything stupid.
Well, we were talking before the show, and the intro music and the show going live clicked on right in the middle of when you and I were just talking, just there, and so it shot right over, and so I failed to notice that your mic didn't click on just yet, so I do apologize for that. But yeah, we were having a good convo. Actually, it's something we can share with the audience, and chat room is open now, so yeah, come on in, join us in the chat room. But yeah, Daniel and I were talking about some Imaginarium stuff and the new scholarship that is going to be coming forward that Daniel is sponsoring for Imaginarium. And we're going to have some a formal announcement on that pretty soon. It's one of our big announcements, as we got several coming up with guests and all kinds of stuff. Daniel's really excited about it, and we are too. But yeah, it's going to be a scholarship to help some folks attend Imaginarium. So yeah, Daniel will be talking about that. I'll let him talk about that a little bit too when we do our formal announcement. But if you want to give a few comments on it right now, go right ahead.
Well, what it'll be is a submittal, not only for the need of being able to come to Imaginarium, but also for the talent that you're bringing to Imaginarium, so that, you know, we can, you know, make sure that the best person gets into Imaginarium, and we can help sponsor that person, you know, for being able to have their tickets and stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
That'll be something that, you know, we haven't done before. I think that we need to do that, because there's a lot of people that would love to come to Imaginarium, either virtual or in live, that cannot afford, you know, especially on the live, to be able to afford to get into Imaginarium and do the hotels and stuff. And this way they'll have a chance of being able to submit some of their work and tell us why they need to be part of the Imaginarium group.
Yep. I think that's going to be great, and definitely it'll get some folks to focus on our core, which is our programming and content, and that's going to be a great, great program and offering. So, yeah, thank you very much for making that happen, Daniel. And we have Rose with us. I see she has logged in as we were discussing that, and I've got your mic on, Rose. I threw Daniel for a curveball and had him muted at the beginning of the show. To talk to him. So see, I'm already ahead of the game with you. I've actually got your mic on. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You will understand, Rose, because today was a day. It was the first day of Sylvia Wolf Bush's new film production. He's doing a short film, really good project. And, yeah, if you haven't gone over to Sylvia Wolf Bush's page, check it out. But Holly volunteered to do the meals for it in volunteer capacity, very noble offer, because that's a lot of work when you have to prepare for over 40 people, you know, for two full meals a day. And,
right.
And then we're also a base camp, as it were, for some cast and crew. So basically every square inch of the house that can be used for people staying over is being used. So sometime
wow.
during the show, I'm probably there's going to be a mob of folks showing up at the house ready to crash. But I'm sealed off. Holly's going to intercept them all. So don't worry, it won't affect the show. But yeah, today I was juggling business stuff. And of course, I did some writing as well, and then going back and forth the set twice to help Holly transport all this food. And yeah, made sure that they're getting actual, you know, Hollywood grade meals, because I mean, you know, we're talking fully cooked meals and not the usual. You know how it is on indie films; you just get pizza every time. But it's not
right.
that. I mean, she's making full meals for them and taking dietary considerations into what we have offered and everything. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I have to admit, if I was working on a film set and had this, I'd be perfectly happy. But yeah, what I heard from the folks in the first meal lunch, they were thrilled. The second meal of the day was delivered. We were on time, but they were running over on the shoot. So we actually, I don't know the full reactions to that, but it was a great, great meal as well. So hopefully, like I said, it took care of them, but a lot of stuff. But yeah, it's been a day. And I'm glad to be sitting here with a glass of bourbon, my tradition for the show, talking with you and Daniel, and we're going to have a fabulous guest tonight, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But, yeah, definitely gotta give a shout-out chat room, because we have, it looks like Carol Preflatish and Sandy Lender are not going to be able to listen to the entire show. They've got a lot of stuff going on tonight. So, but thank you for stopping in. We got Scott Connolly in there. We got our guest from tonight is in there, and I'm not going to announce just yet because that's rolling in here shortly. But Rose, it's been a little bit since you've been on the show. So tell us what has been going on with you. Fill us in. Anything new or what's happening?
Just life, really. And not,
well, that's
not
enough.
Everything. Yeah, it's just life.
Yeah, that's enough at times for all of us. But yeah, definitely. Always thinking of you, and I wish your schedule allowed you to be on more frequently. So we're definitely glad to have you aboard tonight. And thank you, because RG and Holly are both working on the film, so yeah, they're embroiled in all that stuff right now. We're holding a lot. You know how it is, because you're a filmmaker, so it gets crazy.
Yes.
And NaNoWriMo.
For my guys.
Oh, then you need to be on this set, because I'm telling you, Holly's taking care of them. It's a full-blown meal. I had to lug two huge pots today of chili, and we're talking good chili. I mean, really good chili. We actually, one of the crew people said it was the best chili they ever had. So.
Nice.
But they were big, heavy, like restaurant caliber pots. I mean, real big, big pots. So, I mean, I was, helping Holly so she didn't hurt her back too much, because you know how it goes. When Holly's back, so definitely didn't want to have her injure herself. So I was doing my part as following Holly's helper.
Awesome.
Yes, I'm doing. I'm trying.
You get paid properly for it, didn't you?
Oh yeah, we get paid. Yeah, no, we're doing volunteer. We didn't. I mean, yeah, they're paying for the cost of the food items. I mean, yeah, they, you know, as far as like the ingredients and whatnot. But, we're volunteering all of our labor in house and all that.
You know, she probably paid you double what she normally pays you.
Yeah. No, I'm glad to help. It's quite a lot. And indie film crews aren't, you know, if they're not overstaffed, trust me. So I know it gets – And so I'm glad to help. And congrats to NaNoWriMo folks. Yeah, I saw that Carol is doing it. And, yeah, NaNoWriMo is underway for 3 days so far. So congratulations to all of you writers that are doing NaNoWriMo. And while you're out there, if you've got a book published in 2021, be sure to check by the Imaginarium site, because our nominations for the 2022 Imagine Awards are open to publishers, publicists, and authors. You can be self-published, traditionally published, small press, major press, anything. Lots of categories and you know, full range of genres, and easy, no cost for submitting the form for nomination So yeah, definitely go check that out at entertheimaginarium.com. And then also I'll mention that tomorrow we do our first outreach for individual patrons of Imaginarium, and those are like $50, and you get a logo recognition on the site. You can use a business logo or our patron logo, and you can see those on the sponsorship page. And then we also recognize you at the awards banquet and then the program and stuff like that. It's really cool, but this is a big help in helping us operate the convention throughout the year, because, I mean, it's, you know, it is a year-round thing now, and definitely has a lot of attendant costs that, you know, you may not even, you know, think of it at times. I mean, definitely a lot of stuff tied to everything from our software we use, web, you know, the hosting of the sites and everything like that. So it's, yeah, so we're going to be doing a patron outreach tomorrow, and so look for that as well. So that's the news, and I guess last but not least, I did have another book come out last Friday, Hellscapes Volume 3. So if you like Dante's Inferno, Wayne Barlow, Clive Barker style of horror, check it out. New collection of short stories. Really appreciate those of you that have already picked it up. I got a few notes from folks, and glad that that's underway. But yeah, it was cool.
And if you like a collection of long stories, he has that too. So.
Oh yeah, I got a few of that. So, but yeah, it's never a dull moment. Yeah, this last week, it's definitely not been any dull moments. As we had the three book release Friday with Brick Marlin's Ozarium version 2, and then we had Michael Noss new anthology. That was Dark Splinters. E.E. Stone, a lot of great folks in that too. So, a lot of fun. So. But let me get the sponsors done, and we're going to bring our guest right aboard. But tonight we have Sandy Lender and the wonderful Ren Garcia, who asked us that famous question. So, Daniel, be ready to answer that question. We'll start with Sandy Lender as the first spot of the night. And, yes, please listen to this spot and pick this up and show Sandy how much you appreciate her support of the show. And it's a very relevant release. So with that in mind, give this a listen.
Tell an artist in your life you support and believe in them. Author Sandy Lender makes that easy with her latest release, 365 Days to Create and Motivate Your Inner Writer. This workbook is a journal, creative resource, and tool of inspiration all rolled up in one, with 365 prompts and suggestions to stoke the creative brain. Grab it from Amazon in time for holiday gift giving. That's 365 Days to Create and Motivate Your Inner Writer by Sandy Lender.
And yes, definitely check that out, folks. Thank you very much, Sandy, for the support. And now, Ren Garcia with his spot and that famous question, and we'll let Daniel answer that when this is done. Here we go.
The League of Elder dares to be unusual. It's easy to be swept away in this bold and uninhibited landscape where fantastic heroes become old friends and sinister villains inhabit every dark corner. Dare to explore things best left alone. Each book is your lantern, lighting the path to a world never before seen. So what do you say? Are you weird enough for us?
There's your cue,
we'll
Daniel.
Never be weird enough, but we are enjoyable enough to understand your writings.
Yes, we definitely are. I love it. I love your Rengar. Yeah, I just got done interacting with him about a day ago, and hopefully he can make it out to the convention next summer. Yeah, I don't have a confirmation yet, but hopefully, yeah, you all can say hi to him in person next year. But tonight's guest is came to Imaginarium for the first time last year and actually ended up winning our Imagine Award for Best Fantasy Novel. And she is a workshop presenter and public speaker, in addition to being an amazing author of epic fantasy series such as The Watchers of Manaya. And she has a definite interest in the world of animals, with a Bachelor of Arts in Zoology and a passion for endangered species, and in particular, giraffes. So with that being said, I am welcoming onto the Star Chamber show for the first time, Barbara V. Evers. Barbara, your mic is on, and welcome to the show.
Well, hey, Steve. I'm glad to be here. It's wonderful to be able to talk to you again. It's been so long.
Yes, it has. And I was just joking with Daniel before the show how I had the honor of having being there with you for your first ever taste of Kentucky bourbon on the famous Books and Bourbon panel. And well, I care. It is for me. That was a high honor, and it brought you good luck, because then you went on to win the Imagine Award for Best Fantasy Novel. So clearly a correlation,
we'll
I'm sure. But yeah,
I heard you mention that on the podcast right after Imaginarium last year. How I had won, and I'd had my first taste of bourbon, so obviously it was correlated.
Right. Yeah, definitely correlated, yeah, of course. congratulations. That is great. I mean, we had more submissions or nominations and everything than ever before for last year's Imagines, and that was definitely an awesome win for you, and I was glad you could be there in person.
I was too, and I was very honored, and believe me, I have milked that baby for what it's worth, and you know, it's wonderful to be able to say award-winning novel, you know, that's just really a fun thing to be able to do, and with it being my debut novel too, that was really exciting, because it took a long time to get that baby published, and that was the validation I needed to know that, yeah, I was right. This was a good book. So.
Oh, that's awesome. And tonight, yeah, you talked to Rose was there at Imaginarium, so you all might have encountered each other at some point during the weekend. Daniel, however, unfortunately, was not. He was only on the digital side. So, but yeah, we've got a couple of folks here tonight that definitely want to speak with you about writing and all kinds of stuff. And so let's go ahead and let you talk a little bit about, we'll go ahead and start with the writing and what you write. And I gave a little bit, but yeah, I'd rather hear it from you about what you write and what you have out there and you know, kind of themes you're drawn to.
Well, of course, The Watchers of Manaya, the first book of the trilogy, is the one that I entered in the contest last year, and it won, and books 2 and 3 came out in 2021, so they may show up in the contest this year. The Watchers in Exile and The Watchers at War, and it's a complete trilogy, fully out. It's set in a world that is more along the lines of Africa, but it's not our world. It's a fantasy world, and you have a warrior princess whose mother is on her deathbed, and as her mother's dying, this decree she has come up with for her daughter's protection really throws everybody for a loop. The daughter's name is Adana, and her mother knows that this traitor, who's supposed to be dead, actually is not dead and is returning, coming for the throne, and her daughter's not old enough to be queen yet, so she sends her away until she can be queen. And she's sent away to a kingdom that is completely different. She's used to living in a flat savanna-type area. It's a matriarchy. Women are warriors. It's more of a tribal world. And she goes to this more prim and proper patriarchy world. And they're allies, but it is so different. And as you mentioned, animals, she is telepathically bonded with a giraffe. And she can't take the giraffe with her And so that bond is stretched like a really tight rubber band, and it can create a lot of pain. And she's going to be gone for 3 years. So that's how the story starts out. And, of course, obviously the traitor causes a lot of problems throughout. Really, there's four kingdoms that are central to the story. And he's gunning for her throne, and it is a battle down to the end of the third book on what actually happens there.
Oh, that's fantastic. That sounds awesome. And I love that's like my foundation is epic fantasy, so I'm definitely on point for this one for sure. But I know Rose also is a writer of some excellent fantasy, and I noted that, you know, your protagonists are female characters and strong, mm-hmm. sound like very strong female characters, and I know Rose also writes strong female characters. So maybe Rose, this might be a good time for you to get in a little discussion with Barbara about writing, you know, strong female characters and your approaches to them.
Oh, yes, definitely. What was your main motivation to have a female protagonist?
Well, you know, first of all, I'm female, you know, that helps. But I didn't purposefully go for a strong female character, but I've discovered the more I'm writing, because I'm working on an urban fantasy series right now, that lo and behold, we've got a matriarchy again, and we have animals involved again. So obviously matriarchy, strong females, and animals are my thing. And there's a dog in the background. Guess what? In my new one, it's going to be wolves. So there you go.
Well, that's awesome.
I actually am a survivor of domestic violence. So my first marriage was horrible, and I got out of it in 4 years. And I think I unconsciously have tried to create this environment for women to read about women who don't roll over and play dead, women who stand up for what they believe in, women who are strong and stick to it. And getting out of that marriage was huge for me. And I spent 12 years after that as a single parent, and, you know, had to be really, really tough and strong, got a college degree during that time, raising two kids. And it's just, I want people to have that role model, that these role models in fiction that are strong women, so that they know that that's a possibility for them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So, but now you write about strong women too?
I guess you would be considered, like in the Viking Age, you would be considered turning into an adult, but she is growing up throughout the series. So then she becomes more of, you know, the readers would probably feel more accepting of her being an adult, but she starts out very definitely early on with, you know, I can do this on my own. You know, I don't want to be the damsel in distress anymore, or even considered to be the damsel in distress. So.
Right. Well, yeah, the Viking times, that sounds like a lot of fun. And I really like reading things set in that period. And so I need to go look this up, because I do think you and I were on a panel together. I think we were.
I was thinking so whenever I was cyber-stalking you. And and then I followed you on Twitter. So
okay. I'm on
but,
TikTok now
I was
too.
Like, oh, she looks familiar. I know I've seen her somewhere.
Were you on the plotting and pantsing panel?
No. I don't think I was. I think it was mostly like independent film making stuff more than anything else last year.
Okay.
I did more writing panels the year before, but
I feel like there was one time you and I were on something together, though. But I can't
was it a fantasy?
To
that
it.
Probably would have been a fantasy panel, maybe.
See, that's what I thought. I just couldn't confirm it right now, but I thought you two were on a fantasy genre panel together.
That's what I
remember that, but I could be wrong, but I that's what I thought, you know.
And to be honest with you, I've been to so many different cons since then that I can't remember everything I did there.
I know how that goes.
Right.
You know, so we're just going to say we were and go with it, you know, because I'm sure we talked and got to know each other some anyway. So, and I will say this, because y'all were talking about Imaginarium earlier. I had so much fun there. And it's a really great atmosphere. And that was just so exciting for me because you just never know when you're going to try out a new conference what it's going to be like. And people were just so welcoming and so interesting to talk to and just really, really enjoyed every second of it. I didn't want to leave, to be honest with you, but it is what it is. And, of course, because of COVID, we didn't get to go and stand next to, what is the thing downtown, the big statue of the...
The Troll Pub, yes.
The Troll Pub, yeah. So, but, you know, I'm coming back, so we'll go to the Troll Pub this time, right?
Yeah, Rose is with us, I think, on that excursion where we tried. It is. Oh, we were so mad. It was such a bummer. Oh, yeah, they better be. Yeah, we had to skip a tradition a little bit, but that wasn't our fault. But next year, hopefully, it'll be a little bit easier on that. But I did get Barbara. I did get something from the chat room from Sandy Lender. She wanted me to pass along to you to talk about. She would like to. I'll read the whole thing here. She'd like to ask you to share how you show or present younger female characters as strong, yet give them room to grow in their strength. Could you talk about how less strong the young lady can be to go through her character arc? And hopefully that makes sense, but that's I'm just reading over to you there.
Yeah, I get what she's saying. So in The Watchers of Mania, the story starts out on the day that Adana's mother, everybody in the fortress, they don't have a castle, they have a fortress, but everybody in the fortress knows the queen's probably not going to make it through the day. Except Adana. She refuses to believe that her mother is going to pass away. She's 15 at this point. She can't be queen till she's 18. She's not ready. She just wants to be a warrior. She, you know, so rather than do what she's supposed to do, she's out working on her archery trials. She actually passes a major trial. But then a weird thing happens with her bond with her giraffe, and I won't share that here. But she becomes aware, because there's a visual element to this, she becomes aware that something's going on in the kingdom, because a watcher, and that's what the women warriors are called, the watchers, her draft kind of shows her this watcher approaching the fortress at a run, and it's obvious there's something wrong. And so when she comes back to what's going on around her, as opposed to seeing through this giraffe's eyes, she's really intrigued about what's happening, and she begins to figure out that this traitor that she doesn't know, everyone knows is coming back, his name is Malagon, but she realizes he's doing something near the border of the kingdom, and she's supposed to go to her mother. Her mother has called for her because she's on her deathbed, but she's like, uh-uh. I'm going to go stop Malagon. I'm going to make a deal with the creator. I'm going to go stop this traitor right now, and he's going to save my mom. And, of course, she doesn't make it out of the fortress. They stop her, but she sure tried. She sure tried. And so what happens is sometimes she tries things and kind of gets ahead of herself, but she's still this very strong person. And because her mother does die, she has this crisis of faith that she goes through, and it takes her the whole series to kind of come to grips with that one. But there are times where she is doing really well, and then she'll slip up and do something silly because she's still a teenager, you know? But over time, she begins to recognize, like, an opportunity comes up where this young noble in the kingdom where she's sent, the kingdom of Elwar, he's very infatuated with her, and he finds her out wandering the grounds and says, come on, let's go over, let's go visit my father. Let me show you my estate. And she's like, I can't go right now. There's plans. We've got things happening. And she realizes herself that the girl she was right before she left Manaya probably would have said, sure. So just over time, she begins to make better decisions. Sometimes the decisions aren't great. She still is a little headstrong. Even in the last book, she's headstrong. But she's learning to evaluate before she acts. And hopefully maybe that answers Sandy's question, because I'm guessing that's what she was asking. But if it's not, Sandy, you can let me know.
Yeah, I mean, you sounded to me like that. Yeah, that was what she was getting at, for sure. And definitely, I think that you mentioned choices, and I think that is a great area to show development from when the young character in an arc is in the decision making and choice making. Because that's obviously something mm-hmm. that affects all of us when we're in our youth, as we get more, grow older and get through experiences. Hopefully we make better choices, not always, but as far as a literary arc, I mean, that is a great place to focus on for showing the development is in choices. So, yeah, that's something I think that's a good tip, too, for writers.
Oh, yeah,
definitely. One of the things I learned at one of the conferences I've been to, Faith Hunter, I don't know if you're familiar with Faith Hunter and her work. She's one of my favorite authors.
Yes.
But
yes.
She taught a workshop, and her point in her workshop was make it bad, make it worse, make it even worse, make your reader wonder what in the world they're going to do. And so I had to, as you're teaching them to do the right thing, and you're creating a character to do the right thing, the character's also got to slip up some. I mean, Kiffin, who is the there's actually two protagonists in The Watchers of Manaya. You have Adana, who's really your main one, and Kiffin, who's like your secondary protagonist. And he is the heir to the throne of Elwar, where she's sent. And he does some really odd things that actually, when I was writing one particular scene with him, I'm like, oh, no, you don't. Oh, don't you? You idiot. What are you doing? And meanwhile, my fingers are just flying across the keyboard because Kiffin's doing what Kiffin wanted to do. And it's so much fun when your characters do that. But I can remember one of my beta readers getting really upset when she read what he did. And I was like, well, it's what he wanted to do, and he wouldn't let me write it any other way. So, and he had his own little character arc going on because he's not much older than Adana. I think he's a couple years older than her. I'd have to go back and look at my story Bible to be sure, but he's not much older than her in this series, and he had to learn a few things on his own too. So it's fun to watch your characters do these things.
Yeah, Sandy just said it great in the chat room. She says it's obnoxious when the characters run away. I know that goes.
I know what she means, but I kind of get a kick out of it. I just think it's so much fun when all of a sudden this thing happens and you're like, huh, didn't see that coming. Okay, well, let's rethink this thing here. In fact, the third book in the series, there's actually the cover has three women on the cover. The first two books only have Adana on the cover. The third book has three women. Why? Because there's two other women who tried to take over the book. And they have huge story arcs. And they're from the first book all the way through to the third one, but their story arcs in the third book were amazing. And I was like, they all three have got to be on the cover of this third book because they all are growing and expanding. And I got the biggest kick out of what they were doing, to be honest with you, and seeing where they were going. And there were things they did that I'm like, oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. And I'm sitting there going, I'm just a conduit to typing. you know, sometimes. So it's really fun when that happens.
Speaking of the covers, I mean, go ahead, Daniel. Go ahead, and I'll ask my question after you.
So would you say that the three are becoming protagonists together, or are some of them antagonists?
They're protagonists, probably. They're not the antagonists, although one of them, they both start off in the first book semi-antagonists. But in the first book, one of them is, you know, moves quickly more into a friend role as opposed to an antagonistic role. The other one, Adonna doesn't know what to do with her. She just has no clue what to do with her. Her name's Shanna, and she just does not know what to do with this girl that's all of a sudden been foisted on her. And basically, the antagonist and his party have found this. She's a doppelganger for Adonna. They found her, and they know they need to use her somehow. And they end up, through an odd occurrence, convincing another nobleman to gift her to Adonna as a lady's maid. And Adonna's like, I don't know about this girl. So it's kind of interesting. And they're only together for a very short period of time. But being epic, you know, you have all these story paths that are going all sorts of different directions. So they have their own points of view. So Shanna has her own point of view. Adonna has her point of view. The other one is Lyra. Princess Lyra is Tiffin from Elwar, his half-sister. And she was pretty much a spoiled princess in the first book, and I won't say any more about it. But so they all have this interesting story arc, and they're all kind of coming towards the same point at the end in the third book. And so it's kind of interesting. They all play a major, major part. And I just got the biggest kick out of writing them. And there were times where I had to sit back and go, okay, wait a minute. Let's look at this outline we did for the third book. We need to get back over here to Adonna. Shut up, Shanna. Go away, Lyra. But anyway, so yeah, antagonist, protagonist, probably. I think when people read them in the first book, probably figured they would be more antagonists, but they actually ended up not being.
So what voice did you write this book in?
What do you mean?
Is it each person's voice, or is there a narrator involved in it? Or
okay, yeah, it's a multiple point of view book, so there's not a narrator. The majority of it is in Adonna's point of view. Some of it's in Kiffin's too. They're probably your primary points of view. And as time goes on, excuse me, I need to take a sip of water here. As time goes on, Lyra gets a point of view. Shanna got a point of view. It's an epic fantasy. Now, I'm not like, you know, Robert Jordan or George R. Martin, where you've got thousands of characters. I have quite a few characters who ended up with points of view in the story. So, but those are probably the main ones, those four. And there's a few others that carry a few chapters here and there, but those four people probably are your big ones.
Who's your favorite character out of all of them that is not the main protagonist?
Pull-tart.
But it can be an antagonist.
Yeah, it can't or can.
It can. So it can, okay. But who's your favorite? But it can't be the main protagonist.
Okay, there is a character named Pull-tart. He's the young noble who tried to lure Adonna away to see his estate. He is quite infatuated with Adonna. He's also quite infatuated with himself. he was hilarious to write because he was, you know, I took everything I'd ever seen guys who knew they were good looking do, and I put it into Poltark. So, you know,
nice.
If she was, you know, if she takes his arm, ladies, you all know this. If some guys, if you take the arm, they flex the muscle so you can feel that muscle there. He does this kind of thing. He's got this sweep of hair that he lets fall in front of his face because, you know, and he's got the puppy dog eyes and he knows how to use them. And he's got this charming smile that we find out through Kiffin that he's practiced. What cracks me up is I have fibromyalgia, so I have Holly and I have some commonality with some of our physical pains, but because of that, I see a massage therapist, and my massage therapist loves Epic Fantasy, so, you know, we would be talking about the books and everything, but I wouldn't tell him a lot about what was going to happen in them. So once they started coming out, he's reading them, and he goes, I hate Poltark. He better die. I'm like, really? I'm like, what? And then he had his brother read the books. His brother hated Poltark. He wanted Poltark to die. And then I'm talking to my oldest daughter, and she's like, oh, he's hilarious. I love Poltark. You know, it's so funny to see how people will react to these characters. But he was just a kick to write because I could do, you know, this is the thing about antagonists is you could have them do all the things that we would never do. And that was what makes them so much fun.
Right.
The commonality there is the fact that you had females read it that loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And you had guys read it because they know what would happen if they actually did that on a regular basis.
Exactly. Exactly. That's true. That is so true. But it just cracked me up because it never occurred to me somebody would dislike him so early in the series. And I mean, this was in the first book, and they were like, can't stand him. Cannot stand him. So it's interesting because Bo, who's my massage therapist, he's actually read all three books at least 7 times. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
And it blows my mind. He has bought the books and given them away and bought the books and given them away so many times. I'm like, dude, you need to come to conferences with me and stand at my table and sell my books. You know, and he's always busy. Every time I go to a conference, he's always busy because he's like, well, when is it? And he's like, oh, I can't do that. But he'll sit there and tell me stuff I do in my writings, and I'm like, really? I do that. He goes, oh, yeah. And after a few read-throughs, he goes, I can always tell when someone's going to die. I'm like, you can? He goes, yeah, you've got to tell. I was like, okay. I won't tell you what it is, but it's just kind of interesting. I got to think about it. I was like, well, he's probably right, you know, but it's fun to talk about your work with somebody who's read it so much. And, you know, to hear as he was reading them, he would ask me questions and I'd just go, you know, I wouldn't answer him. And it was so funny. And he's dying now to know what's going on with the new series that I'm working on. But he saw a glimpse of it because he subscribes to my newsletter and he saw like the first couple of pages. And I was like, there's a big hint in there. And he hasn't figured it out yet. And it's about to kill him, but he'll be okay.
Well, we'll have to get him to be the moderator for a moderated Q&A with you at a future conference.
I think that would be cool.
Sounds like he definitely is
a writer.
Yeah, sounds like he knows your material back and forward. That definitely was 7 reads per book. That is impressive.
He will tell me stuff, and he'll tell me stuff, and I'm like, oh my gosh, did that happen in the book?
Oh, that is awesome.
You know, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Well, by the time it was all done, it's like, what, over, it's like 350,000 words, you know. It's hard to keep track of every little bit of it. So,
Oh, definitely, definitely. And actually, along those lines, we just got a question from the chat room asking how to best get past the initial procrastination and tornado of ideas, character design, and other areas. So it's a, I guess it's more of a writing tip, how to best get past the initial procrastination and tornado of ideas.
I don't have a huge problem with that. I have the problem of I'm raising grandchildren and I'm busy, and I'm running my own business and I'm trying to write in between all of this. And so my problem is I've got all this I want to write, and trying to get the free moments to write is my hard part. But I can tell you, before I was raising grandchildren and I was writing, if I got stuck, I would just go back and start editing like a few chapters back. And a lot of times if I started editing, by the time I got to where I'd stopped writing, I was ready to go again. Sometimes I would get to a point where I'm like, I need to pull back here. What's actually going on here? What's happening? And I'd sleep on it. And I'd wake up the next morning. Usually I'd wake up before it was daylight. When this happens, and I have all this stuff figured out, and it's amazing. I don't know if other people do it, but I can sleep on it, and it comes to me in my sleep. And you know, I could not figure out when I signed the contract for the first and the second, they were already written, but my publisher said, how soon can you get the final book written? Because I'm not going to go to publish, because he's a small publisher. I'm not going to go to publish until I know you've got that third book. And so we signed in June, and I finished writing. We signed in July. I finished writing the third book, which was 116,000 words, in early October. But what I struggled with was how to start it. I knew what was going to happen. I just couldn't figure out where to start. And every morning I get up, I do these stretches because fibromyalgia, and it helps me not hurt myself if I do these first. And I'm sitting there doing the stretches, and all of a sudden this line came to me, and I'd stop and write that line down and a few more lines, and I had the beginning of the third book. So sometimes I sleep on it. You know, sometimes I just go back. Early on, when I got really stumped, I was like, well, what's this person over here doing? And I'd write about somebody else for a little while. And then I'd know what to do. So I'm brimming over with ideas all the time. And it's more, can I type fast enough to keep up with it?
Nice, nice. And thank you to Scott Connolly for posting that question. It actually came from his wife, April, according to what I see in the chat room here. Thank you, Scott. And thank you, April,
Scott.
Because obviously you're listening,
April,
too. So, yeah, thank you both. And, speaking of your publisher and the your book and how it's presented, you have some really good covers. And I have to admit that you're probably one of the only epic fantasy writers in the genre to have a cover with a warrior riding a giraffe on Watchers in Exile. So, but the consistency is great between the three covers. I mean, it's really well, a good design because the colors are consistent. Fonts, everything. I mean, it's a really well presented. And talk a little about your covers, and because you did mention earlier the cover with three of your protagonists on them.
Right.
But did you get to work with your artist? Who is the artist or designer? They all look good. They really do.
The artist is J. Caleb Design. I think his name is Jake Clark. I'd have to look that back up, but. I'll be honest with you, I was terrified. I did not know what the covers were going to end up like. And Chris had told me, the publisher had told me, he goes, well, you get some say-so, but I had limited say-so. So I was a little nervous about it and wasn't sure what was going to happen with it. And I said, well, what are we going to put on the cover? He says, well, you tell me, find a good action scene. Okay, well, I came up with an action scene, and he didn't like that, so we tried something else, and eventually, I said, well, why don't we do the scene at the beginning when she's doing this archery trial? So I told him what she looks like, and he didn't get exactly what she looks like right, but he was pretty close. And I said, well, she's doing this thing. You know, she's trying to pass this trial, and she's shooting at a target across the archery field. I said, but we've got to have giraffes on the cover. So all three books do have giraffes on the cover. The second book has a big giraffe. But I knew we needed the giraffes, so we had to make sure they were in the background and that she wasn't pointing the bow and arrow towards them. And he put her out in the wilderness instead, but it was such a beautiful cover, and I was so excited. I actually cried when I saw the cover. I actually cried because it was just so beautiful, and, just to see your character come to life and see how someone else sees her, and I just was really excited about it. Now, the second book, once again, I gave him a couple of scenes, and this is the artist's interpretation of what I told him, because he's got her writing on the back of the giraffe. Yes, she does do that once in the second book, but it's not like this, because she is leaping from a crippled horse to the back of a giraffe. And think about it, the back of the giraffe is going to be a lot higher up than the horse. And she's fleeing at this point. And so she is fighting to hang on. She's holding on to the mane. It's a very uneven, because giraffes, I don't know, I forget the term for it, but giraffes don't walk like other animals. And so, and when they run, it's like all legs go in at once. But for example, when they're walking, both right legs go forward and then both left legs go forward. Whereas other animals, it's diagonal. So it's a very uneven thing. So yeah, she looks nice, and the cover pops. It definitely pops, but that's not what that ride looked like. Not one bit. But again, Jay Clark did this cover. He did a great job on this cover, too. And then that third cover, I'll be honest with you, when I said, I think we need these three women on the cover, and we need Adonna in the front, and we need Shanna on one side and Lyra on the other, and they each need to have their weapon of choice. And I just had this horrible fear I was going to get a Charlie's Angels cover. And thank goodness I did not. And I think it's actually... I really was afraid of that. But I think it's my favorite cover because it's got such beautiful colors in it. So, and there's this thing in Manaya called glimmer fire. And so if you look at the cover down near their feet, there's fire. And that plays a big, big part in the third book, is the glimmer fire. So it's really just, I was very, very, very pleased with these and really excited as each one came out. And the cool thing is, I did it on purpose, write Adonna as biracial, but she is. And when I started writing these books, my granddaughter was not alive yet. But I have two biracial grandchildren. And unconsciously, before I ever had biracial grandchildren, I was writing a biracial character. And so when these covers would come up, I think Victoria was with me every time I got the first, here's your cover. And she would look at it, she goes, oh, it looks like me. And you don't know what that did to my heart. Because you don't see biracial people, you don't see different races very often on fantasy covers. So for her to look at it and be able to relate to the character on the cover was really cool.
That is really cool. That is really cool. And you're right. It's beautiful. I mean, all three of them, I mean, are definitely, I mean, well done. And definitely shout out to your cover designer for sure. And I've got to say, though, your book, too, has got to be a conversation starter at conventions with that giraffe and the writer. Yeah, that's got to start some conversations. Yeah. That's got to be that was brilliant. That was brilliant because I know that your designer was saying, oh, yeah, that's going to get some people over to the table or the bookshelf. Or store shelf. I mean, that's definitely good. That's awesome.
People do notice it. What's funny is I went to Fantasy last year in this year, I guess. I keep saying last year because it feels like forever ago, but Fantasy was in May. And somebody told me, because I got there right as everything was starting, so I missed some of the gatherings that people do beforehand and so forth, and they were like, yeah, you should have been here. Terry Maggart's another author, great guy, but he loves giraffes too. It turns out he had said
I know him.
he had said to this group of people, if I ever sell as many books as J.K. Rowling, I'm going to ride in there on a giraffe. And I said, did you show him the cover of my book? No. So you know what I did? I tracked that man down. I said, look.
That's
and
awesome.
I'm actually reading his latest right now, The Lost Kingdom. So really, he and I connected really well because we just love giraffes. And I don't know, he's a really fun guy. It sounds like you know him.
Yes. And, I've been to some conventions with him, on panels with him, and just a great author in person. So, yeah, I can definitely speak for about that for sure. Let's get into a little bit of a segue into one of your big passions right on that topic. Why a giraffe? And what has drawn you to giraffes in particular? I mean, that is an interesting thing. You don't see that.
Believe it or not, there is a whole community out there that loves giraffes. Go on Facebook and just search on giraffe, and you will find so many giraffe-themed groups. You would not believe it. But I actually have been in tune with giraffes since I was 16. I'll make it brief, but we had my family had gone to Washington, D.C. for vacation, because my aunt lived in Tacoma Park, Maryland, one of the suburbs of D.C. And so one of the things we did while we were there is we went to the Washington National Zoo. And I'm 16. The last thing I want to be doing is walking around a zoo with my mom and dad and my little sister and my older brother. So I'm like, y'all, I'm going to just wander around. I'll catch up with you. So I walked around, I looked around, and I got tired, and I decided I'd just sit down. And I happened to sit down in front of the giraffe enclosure. And there was a giraffe there that just stared at me. And I stared back. And we just watched each other this whole time. And then it was really, they're curious animals. I didn't know this at the time, but it was really cool how we just watched each other. And so after that, I was kind of hooked, and I started noticing things with giraffes. Over time, I started reading about giraffes, and it was hard to find books on giraffes because for the longest time, there was no research done on giraffes, very little. I actually did find a book called The Giraffe, It's Biology, Behavior, and Ecology, and I bought it. It's like a textbook. But
it
is. But most of the stuff that's out there has been kid stuff, you know, and anything I could find on a giraffe, I was absorbing it. If you could go to a zoo and feed a giraffe, I was feeding the giraffe. My husband knows, Bruce knows, if we go anywhere where there's a zoo where you can feed a giraffe, we're going to that zoo, and I'm going to feed the giraffe. And he just knows that. So it's just something that kind of grew over time. People associate me with giraffes. I'm sitting here looking at my desk, and it's covered in giraffe things. And the majority of it I didn't buy. Other people gave it to me. One day I did a count. This was several years ago, so the number's a lot higher. As far as giraffe items, I have over 300, most given to me. And that goes from jewelry, clothing, statues, all sorts of things. And so it's just something that kind of grew. And eventually I discovered the Giraffe Conservation Foundation and started reading their information. And interestingly enough, the Fennessy, I can't think of his first name right now, but it's the Fennessy's, Stephanie, and I can't think of her husband's name right now, but they run Giraffe Conservation Foundation in Namibia. And he was actually working on his doctorate, and it was like, either do elephants or do giraffes. And he figured out that there wasn't much written on giraffes, so there'd be less contradiction to anything he wrote. So he decided to pursue giraffes. And over time, they discovered that giraffes are dying out, and they're just not getting the acknowledgement that the rhinos and the elephants do, because people weren't really tracking giraffes or paying much attention to them. And of course, you've got the ivory tusks with the elephants and so forth. And so people are aware of that. It turns out for every giraffe in the wild, there are 4 elephants in the wild. So there's more elephants in the wild than giraffes. And the idea that we could have a world that didn't have giraffes, that's just not acceptable to me. To say the least. And so I'm a big proponent of supporting Giraffe Conservation Foundation. I give 5% of my royalties to them and promote them as much as I can, because giraffes are an amazing animal. And people think of them like Joffrey Giraffe. Remember the Toys R Us stores?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not that goofy giraffe. They're one of the most elegant animals out there. They are the tallest animal in the world. Their biology is amazing because, I mean, for them to drink water, they have to bend down, and their heart is set up so it can still pump the blood and they don't pass out. And there's so much about them that's really, really fascinating. And they are actually the watchtower of the savannah in Africa, which is kind of how the watchers came to be, because the watchers in my book, some of the traits that giraffes have keen eyesight, and the creator in the Manayan world gifted people, certain women, with this enhanced eyesight and the ability to read, you know, things in the distance and pick up on body cues and pick up on changes in the horizon and so forth. And that's part of their gift, the watchers. And you can't just be a watcher because you want to be. You have to be somebody who's gifted with this. And they have incredible aim and a lot of different things. So I took a lot from the giraffe and I put it into the watchers. And so it wasn't a huge jump to later add giraffes to the actual story with a telepathic bond. And that actually came from some research that a while back, they didn't think giraffes had a language, and they thought they communicated telepathically. Turns out they do have a language. It's just at a decibel we can't hear. So their language is, it's beyond our ability to hear it. And so I forget how they picked it up, but they did eventually. But a lot of what the giraffes stand for went into my warriors in the Watchers of Manaya.
That's awesome.
Answer, wasn't it?
No, that's great, because I was really interested to hear about why you what drew you to drafts, why, and that kind of thing. And so hopefully, if Netflix executives are looking for something interesting after Tiger King, maybe I can pitch them Giraffe Queen, and then have you do a show with Netflix or something in the future. But Giraffe Conservation Foundation, yes, is Julian Fennessy, I believe, is the one you wanted to mention. And I love their hashtag. It's hashtag Stand Tall for Giraffe. That's what their it looks like their hashtag is. Yeah, their site. I had to go look at their site to see what you're all part of. So that's awesome. That is it looks like a great organization.
There.
Yeah.
They
looks
are.
Like a
they're
great...
very small, but they're good.
Yes, and I even have a link to adopt a giraffe. So that's kind of neat. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah, giraffeconservation.org. I'll have to give a shout out to that web address, giraffeconservation.org.
Right.
And tell them you heard about it from Barbara if you go there. So
absolutely
awesome.
They know me. They've got the books. In fact, I contacted them when the books were going to come out, and I said, I want to give a percentage to you guys. I did a YouTube video with Stephanie. Unfortunately, she couldn't turn her camera on because they were having a rare thunderstorm in Africa at the time during the dry season. So that was weird. But still, I had this long conversation with her. Her son read the books first and loved them. And so, they've been very supportive of the books and very excited. There's some things that happened in the third book that made them kind of sad. And I told them, yeah, I know. But unfortunately, I had to think about what would happen in reality. And, so there's some things that aren't, for a giraffe conservation person, it hurts, but they're still very, very supportive and wonderful people. And they do such cool stuff there. I mean, they are always moving giraffes into safer areas because a lot of the giraffes are dying out just because of civilization crawl. And you should go on their site and watch some of their videos where they move giraffes. It is mind-boggling to watch.
So what
I've got them up on
my
– what's that, Daniel?
What is the name of your giraffe?
My giraffe is in my books, you mean?
Whichever.
Yeah, in the books. The giraffe that's bonded to Adonis' name is Ambrosia. The giraffe that is destined to be bonded to her betrothed is Thaidish. Her mother's giraffe was Julati, and her father's giraffe is Valent. When it comes to adopting giraffes on GCF now, you don't really get a specific giraffe anymore. It used to be you do, but now you're just kind of adopting giraffes as a whole. So I'd have to go back up. There was a new one not too long ago. I tried to get, they had a contest where you could name the giraffe. I tried real hard. I entered it, tried to put Ambrosia in there, but it didn't end up being Ambrosia. I'm trying to remember which giraffe it was. But they name their giraffe, and it's interesting. You can tell a giraffe by their spots. It's like our fingerprints. So
right.
Each giraffe's spots are different, and that's how you can identify them.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's
and I've got their tab up on my browser. I intend to, after the show at some point, to go check out some of those videos for sure. That looks like a very interesting site.
It really is.
And great. Great cause. What other, you have a background in zoology. I mentioned that early in your introduction. And so, like I said, this is clearly a longtime passion for you with animals. And what other animals are in your, for lack of a better word, favorites? What other animals are you drawn to in your fiction or personally as your favorites?
Well, of course, I'm a dog person. I have a dog. And I've always had a dog. Our dog Roxy is a rescue. She's an Australian Shepherd. The urban fantasy novel that I am almost done writing right now. Actually has wolves, but they're spirit wolves. So that's kind of cool. And I've done like a bit of research on wolves since then and discovered how misunderstood wolves are. And I actually, one of the things that in The Watchers at War, which is the third book, there is a new animal. It's a jerboa, which is an animal. It's a rodent that lives in Africa.
I know what they are.
Really, really,
they're awesome.
Yeah, really big ears. Yeah, they're pretty cool. But see, one of the things is the Watchers weren't the only gifted people that the creator gave gifts to. There were Watchers, and you find out in the second book, they're also listeners, seers, and empaths. But most people don't think they even exist anymore, but they do. And one of the people we've talked about today turns out to be a listener and bonds with a jerboa. And just like with the giraffe helping enhance Adana's ability to see things, the jerboa enhances this person's ability to hear things. So, and I spent a long time researching animals before I figured out which one that was going to be, because I needed something that was inconspicuous for this particular character to bond with. We went with the jerboa, but I love so many animals. It's just, you know, I grew up in Clemson, so I got to love my tigers. You know, those of you who don't know, Clemson University has their mascot, the tiger.
Oh, yes.
So, yes. Yeah, I'm from 6 months on up, I lived in Clemson. So, you know, there's a little bit of orange blood in me, I guess. I actually have giraffes all over my desk, but there is one other animal, and it is a meerkat. So I fell in love with meerkats. Yeah, they're pretty cool. So,
they are awesome. I love meerkats.
They really are. I'm happy with just about any animal, to be honest with you. So, but I will say this. I don't like snakes.
You and Holly must be related from another something. I mean, yeah, because, yeah, she I swear, you guys have a lot of common ground. And, yeah, that's yet another area. Yeah, she despises.
That's
not a fan of snakes. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, the first time I spoke with her, I think you were overhearing our conversation that first time we talked.
I was in the office,
pretty quick.
Remember that.
Yeah, we clicked really well, and it was just a lot of fun talking with her. And I look forward to talking some more and getting together with you guys in July.
Yes, but yeah, you mentioned snakes. I was like, wow, yeah, there's another area that you guys have in common. But, no, we can't. There's always some least favorites too in everybody's list.
Yeah. Yeah.
But meerkats, definitely another plus.
Are you big into jackalopes?
Are jackalopes real?
Sure. Hadn't you seen one stuff?
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, I don't. I'm suspicious, Mr. Dark.
I am too. There's something called Photoshop, you know.
Well, maybe
next. That's okay.
Maybe next Imaginarium, we'll see you walking around with a sugar glider on your shoulder or something cool like that. You know those little things. They are awesome.
I know someone who has. I've met several people who have sugar gliders. The problem with sugar gliders is they are up at night. They don't.
And they get
sleep
bonded
during the day
too.
And yeah, and so I because of the fibromyalgia, I need to be able to sleep when I need to sleep. So yeah, I don't foresee sugar gliders. Although
they're
cute. So they
I was just trying to think of an animal that you could walk around with at a convention that would be easy to port around, and they usually like to hang out on your person, so would be an easy one.
They do.
Baby crocodile. No, I don't.
You know, we went to Panama City Beach, Florida for vacation this summer. Of course, it also was a book event, so we combined those. But we went to the zoo, and you could feed the – it was probably alligators instead of crocodiles. I have to go back and look. But I have video of the kids tossing the food out, and my granddaughter, who's 14, going, "Oh, aren't they so cute?" And I'm going, "Huh?" I wouldn't call – they are a beautiful animal. I don't think I'd call them cute, but she was, oh, baby talking to them. This is so funny.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And, well, as I did mention as far as like seeing you in person at conventions, and you have one this weekend, Conjuration. So I'd like to learn about what Conjuration is and where, and I guess tell folks how they can come see you that are listening.
Yeah, Conjuration is in Atlanta this weekend. It starts on Friday and goes through Sunday. And it is a Harry Potter-themed conference. So everything kind of circles around the idea of Harry Potter. And the workshops are, I mean, there's a workshop I'm going to be on. I'm going to be on it with Lydia Scherer. I know you know Lydia.
Yes, definitely do.
It's called What Would It Be Like to Be a Wizarding Mom? I mean, how cool a panel is that going to be? But they have all sorts of panels that are related to it. I'm going to be on one called What If Harry Potter, where we consider, well, you know, what if, you know, Dumbledore didn't die? What if Voldemort turned the Sword of Gryffindor into a Horcrux? You know, they're doing all sorts of really cool stuff, and I know you've probably put my website out there somewhere, but if you haven't, it's BarbaraVEvers.com. I actually have my schedule on my blog today, so you can go in there and see. I mean, I'm doing one, Learning to Love Our Villains. The Animals as Characters that I did there at Imaginarium, I have done that just about everywhere I've gone. I'm doing it there, too. But they have... They even do the panels, and I had a conflict. I wanted to do one of these where they take well-known characters from other universes and they sort them into the houses. And I was going to be in the one on sorting Buffy and Angel. I really wanted to do that one. But it ended up being in conflict with the Wizarding Mom one. And I decided I really... If I had to pick, I wanted to do the Wizarding Mom one. So, but if you go, I think it's Conjuration, let me see, conjuration.com. Conjurationcon.com. You can get tickets at the door. I don't think you can buy them online anymore, but it's like $75 for the weekend, I think. It was cheaper online. The schedule, they have their schedule in the Yap app, Y-A-P-P. And, I mean, they've got raptors. They're going to have reptiles. It's all considered family-friendly. So it's supposed to be Harry Potter for their kids, their parents, other people, any age. And I think it's their eighth year. I had never heard of them, and I just started, just like I found y'all, I Googled, you know, Fantasy Con near me. And that's how I found y'all, and that's how I found them. And I'm really, really excited about it because I think it's going to be a ton of fun. The kids are coming. My husband's coming. They're going to have a Yule ball. My granddaughter's real excited because she's going to wear – she was a steampunk plague doctor for Halloween. And so she's going to wear that to the Yule ball. And I don't know. I think it's going to be really a big kick, and pretty excited to see how this one goes.
Yeah, that looks like it'd be a blast. And yes, you're right. It was a $70 for the three days, as far as currently.
Yeah,
so, that's awesome. And they do have day passes too. It looks like. yeah, they have Friday and Saturday and Sunday day passes as well. But yeah, that's great. I actually wasn't aware of that one, so that's cool to find out that that's a genre specific one too. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, and I'm really, really excited that I can, you know, that even my grandson Amari, who's 10, can actually come and probably find something he's going to enjoy. Victoria went with me to one conference back in the spring. She went with me to Atomicon in North Charleston, South Carolina, and she had a grand time. So she was excited. I knew she was coming with me. It was just kind of on the fence on whether my husband was going to be able to, whether we were going to work it all out where he could come, because somebody's going to have to keep an eye on Amari during all this time. So I think they're going to really, I'm excited to share that part of my world with him, since his sister's already seen part of it, you know.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Rose, you're not too far away from that one where you are in Knoxville. Yeah, you're closer than I am, and I'm not too far. Yeah, so yours is the hop, skip, and a jump from there.
Yeah, you're not too far from me either, Rose, if you're in Knoxville, because I'm in the I live in Greer, South Carolina, but that's really the Greenville area of South Carolina. So what am I think maybe an hour and a half from you?
Yeah. Yeah, that's close.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty close. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so yeah, I'm not terribly far from there. I mean, it's about a 5.5-hour drive or so from Lexington, but Atlanta, but that's not horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had much worse as far as drives go, but it's a straight shot down I-75 for me, so it's a pretty easy directions. But it's that is cool, and again, that's conjurationcon.com is the website if you want to check that out and go see Barbara down there this weekend, November 5 to 7. Mm-hmm. And what else, you know, obviously you're busy. So what else is on the calendar for 2021, early 2022?
Well, I'm doing a couple local things. I'm going to be at a, it's Words and Wine, Books for Gifts, something like that in Columbia, which is the capital of South Carolina. On November 18th, and all this stuff's on my website, you can find it. I'm going to be doing something down at USC Aiken on the 13th, where it's all day authors selling books and workshops and panels about writing and so forth. Of course, I'm going to be with you guys in July. I've applied to some other conferences. I just haven't heard back yet, like JordanCon. I'm hoping I'll get into JordanCon this year. I'm really excited about the Wheel of Time series coming on Amazon this Monday.
Yeah, a couple of weeks away.
I thought somebody said something. I thought I heard somebody.
I said that was exciting.
Yeah.
It is so exciting because, believe it or not, Robert Jordan's Wheel of Time series was probably the biggest influence on my writing of The Watchers of Mania. So I even did a blog post on that not too long ago. You can go back to my website and find it. But that series, to me, is the penultimate epic fantasy series. So I'm really, really psyched. And I know they've changed some things. I'm holding my breath and waiting to see. But I'm excited, and I'm hoping I get to go to JordanCon this year. Con Carolina, I went to them last year. I've applied. I haven't gotten the official acceptance, but they kind of hinted around that I'd probably be coming back this year. So beyond that, I haven't made any real decisions because, again, I'm raising grandchildren, and there's only so much one can do. So,
well, it sounds like you got a nice run of events coming, and you'll have to tell them that Words and Wine that you've already done Books and Bourbon up here in Louisville. Sounds almost would be like a related event almost, but
yeah, there you go.
That's cool. That's cool. And we're getting down about 5 minutes left in the show, so I definitely want to give you a chance to tell folks where the best, you know, social media, you mentioned your website, but anywhere you want people to connect with you.
Pretty much you can find me with at Barbara V, and that's V as in Victor, Barbara V Evers. My Facebook page is Barbara V Evers Author. TikTok, I'm Barbara V Evers Author. I can't say it now, but that's what I am. I think Twitter and Instagram, I'm just Barbara V Evers. So I stuck with pretty much the same thing from place to place to place. So you can find me easily enough. If you go to my website, BarbaraVEvers.com, you will find links to all of that. I actually have a YouTube channel, too. And you can find links to that. I'm pretty sure it's on my website. If it's not, I'll try to put it out there sometime soon. But on my YouTube channel, I occasionally, at least once a month, try to read a short story. So you can go out there and see some of the short stories I've written. The majority of them actually are not fantasy. They tend to be more contemporary fiction. But and some of them are related to, like, domestic violence and so forth. So, and I'm looking at my website. I do have a YouTube link over, if you're on the website, the left area of the screen. You can see links to everything. Including subscribing to my newsletter. I give away swag all the time to subscribers. So that's the best way to keep track of what's going on there. And if you go to my website and look over on the left side where it gives my bio and sign up for my newsletter and stuff about my books, and it says here, winner of the 2021 Best Fantasy Novel Imagine Award. Imagine that.
I see what you did there.
And links to all the different social media. And there's actually even a link to my business website, too. So lots of stuff out there.
Yep. And your link works because I just subscribed to your YouTube channel. I love YouTube. So you have a new subscriber as of right now. So, so I tested the link while we're on the air. We have definitely covered lots of stuff tonight. It's been a great conversation. Mm-hmm. But is there anything that or any of us have possibly left out that you wanted to make sure to get in on today's show?
I want Holly to cook for me.
she never says no to that. I mean, she loves to cook. Yeah. Which
I'm not a fan. I don't cook. I bake occasionally. So anytime I find somebody who likes to cook, I'm game. Cook for me.
Yeah. And now she's had her new toy is the Pampered Chef air fryer, and it does work magic. So it's like the wings, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've done wings.
Yeah, wings in an air fryer. Oh, my gosh.
Yep. And they were delicious. They were absolutely great. And it's like I never ask Holly to do this stuff when I post these fancy dinners on, like, Instagram or my homepage. She just does them. And then I luck out because, she wants to have me share them with her.
It's
good fortune.
Luckily, I married a man who likes to cook. So that helps.
That is not in my skill set, unfortunately. So I can't reciprocate, unfortunately. But,
I can do it. I just don't like doing it. That's the thing. It's just not my thing. So, but I also want to just say thank you so much for letting me be here and inviting me to Imaginarium last year and inviting me back again this year as a spotlight guest. I'm so excited that I'm a spotlight this year.
Yes, so, it's going to be awesome. Can't wait. We're about to start to roll out the announcement. So very shortly, very shortly.
That's cool. Very cool.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight, Barbara, and definitely want to have you back sooner than later. So, yeah, you've got a lot going on, and folks, all three of her books are on Kindle Unlimited, if you're a Kindle Unlimited user. Yeah. I noticed that, too. So check out the Watchers of Mania series, and that is also the title of book one. But thank you so much, Barbara, for joining us, and I'll let you get the final word, and then Rose and Daniel take us out for the night.
Okay. Thank you, and y'all go check out the giraffes on Giraffe Conservation Foundation. That's my heart right there.
Rose, you there?
Yes, yes. I was moving.
Yeah.
Cats were on me.
Oh, it's all right. But, yeah, you can go ahead and give your sign off, and then Daniel will take us out there.
Okay. It was so nice to get to chat with you again and for you to be a guest on the show. And I'm so looking forward to seeing you again at next year's Imaginarium.
I'm looking forward to it, too.
And Mr. Dark.
And as always and everything, there's only one place that you need to go to find out all things about being creative, and that's the Imaginarium and Star Chamber every Wednesday night, so that you can listen to other great artists like we've had here tonight. And shall we talk again next week? This is Daniel Dark signing off.